Welcome to the Life After Sugar podcast, the podcast that's not just about sugar, but about your relationship with it and also with food and especially with yourself. So if you want to discover your life after sugar and hear inspiring stories from all kinds of people who also cut out sugar in their way, at their pace, for their own reasons, this is the podcast for you. Because you know, when you take away the sugar, you can finally discover the real sweetness in your life. I'm your host, Netta Gorman. And this week, I'm talking to my guest, Keith Blakemore Noble, who is an expert in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, as well as being a master hypnotist and a coach. What does any of that have to do with sugar? Well, you'll find out in this episode when Keith and I talk about how sugar and the brain are related, and not just how sugar affects the brain, but how what you think and believe about sugar can be changed. We'll get to our chat in just a minute. But first, I just wanted to tell you that if you're looking for some free resources about how to cut sugar, then I have plenty for you. Come check out the Life After Sugar Facebook page and subscribe to the Life After Sugar YouTube channel, as well as my Instagram account at My Life After Sugar, which is where you'll get all kinds of inspiration, pictures of meals, short reels, useful info to get you started on your life after sugar, as well as thought-provoking quotes and even sometimes pictures of our cat, so that you can see that it's perfectly possible to live a happy and active life, even if you don't eat sugar. You can also check out my TikTok account at Netta_lifeaftersugar. And if cravings are getting in the way and causing you to fall off the wagon, then I have 5 tips for you, especially if you're an intermittent faster, to help you get rid of cravings. Go to aftersugarclub.com and download your 5 tips today. You can also find my simple guide for getting more energy with less sugar by going to aftersugarclub.com, scrolling down to the bottom and clicking on Simple Guide. And while you're there at aftersugarclub.com, you can also have a look at the videos I've made for you to show you what to eat that doesn't contain added sugars, where to find real whole foods at the grocery store, and also how to look after your gut health, because cutting sugar is one of the best things you can do for your gut health. Go to aftersugarclub.com to get your free resources today. All right, so today I'm talking with Keith, and we're going to be talking about manipulation. But just before, Keith, can you just tell us a little bit about your background, how you grew up, what you used to eat or what you still eat during your childhood and beyond?
Yes, sure. So, my name is Keith Blakemore Noble. I live up in the northeast of Scotland. As you can tell by the accent, I was born and brought up here. I then moved down to England to university for 3 years, ended up living down there for many, many, many years before coming back. My background isn't, so I don't claim any expertise in the arena of food, other than someone who I've enjoyed eating for my entire life. I find it's been a lifelong hobby, eating.
yeah, join the club.
I mean, I know at one stage I was the biggest issue I think I probably had would have been my Coke habit. I used to drink 6 cans of it a day.
Wow,
which is probably not that healthy, especially it's never on its own, is it? I mean, I used to get it from the vending machine at work. So you'd nip to the vending machine, pop your money in, get a can of Coke, and oh, I'll have a pack of crisps while I'm at it, or oh, a bar of chocolate while I'm at it, or whatever. And so it's on 6 cans a day. And I did sort of think, I should probably stop drinking this amount. It's not really not healthy for me. I tried stopping, and I kind of couldn't. I did kind of get withdrawal symptoms from it, which was interesting. At that point, my career was in IT, which was great fun, and also had the added bonus that you didn't really have to speak that much with people, which was a bonus for me because I grew up being terrified of speaking with strangers. I was painfully shy. IT worked brilliantly until I had one panic attack too many, decided I needed to do something about it. For me, that involved learning hypnosis, NLP, coaching, learning all of those stuff right up to the trainer level so that I could sort myself out, my fear of speaking with people, etc. Worked really well. I now work, that's what I do for my day job, as it were, as a coach. I've been helping thousands of people around the planet for the past 12 years. I had to think there how long, because it's been going for a while. What interestingly, one of the things that I did though was there's a process I have, which basically it takes something you like and turns it into something you dislike. And I did that with Coke, thinking, you know what, let's see what happens. See if I can kind of get rid of this habit, because I did try, as I said before, I tried quitting it. I tried, right, you know, from this weekend, I'm not drinking anymore. I lasted about half a day. So I thought, we'll give this thing a go, see how it works. So I did the whole thing, turned it into something that I disliked. So just the thought of drinking it made me feel physically nauseous. I thought, you know what I'll do? I've got a bottle. Once I've done this, I'll open it and pour it down the sink. You know, the whole symbolic thing like alcoholics do when they go on to an Al-Anon program or whatever. Couldn't even bring myself to open the bottle. It's like, oh, no, this is awesome. This is interesting. And it's like that. Stopped drinking Coke. Plus, of course, that meant I cut down on the chocolate and the crisps and so on. Over the course of 6 months, I lost 25 kilograms just by doing that, not by doing any extra exercise or anything, but just by doing that. Isn't that interesting how stuff that we don't really think about on a day-to-day basis can have such a big impact?
That's amazing. And that was all through the power of hypnosis? Or how did that happen? I understand how it happened that you lost the weight because, you know, you cut the sugar. Newsflash. But how did that happen that you went from liking it to not liking it?
So there's a fairly simple NLP process that that can use, which is handy to help. I mean, I've used this to help lots of people give up almost an addiction, as it were, to like crisps or drinking lemonade, or someone used to drink so many cups of coffee that I'm sure their blood was 90% coffee and then they wanted to give it up. All of these sorts of things. It's part of what I use when I help people quit smoking as well. What you do is you change the associations that your mind has about this thing, because when we think of something, we're drawing upon the memories and everything that's associated with it, the feelings, all of that sort of thing. And if you can change the feelings that are associated with that particular memory, you change your response to it. Now, it didn't turn Coke into something that I physically disliked. And that's something I have to stress when people use this approach. Had I gone, I wonder if I could drink a can of Coke? Absolutely, I would have been able to drink it. But what it does is it gives me enough willpower to go, you know, oh, just the thought of drinking it makes me feel, so I'm not going to be tempted to drink it. And we do that by changing the associations. And the reason we can do that is something to do with a flaw in the way memory works. Because when you remember something, you're not actually remembering the thing. You are remembering the last time you remembered it. Because the act of replaying a memory actually destroys that memory. Because the way the memories are stored, it's chemical and electrical charges and all this sort of stuff. So by playing that memory back, it's like a cake. In order to taste a cake, you have to eat it. In order to play a memory, you destroy the memory. But fortunately, our mind records us remembering the memory so that we still have that memory in some form, so we can play it back next time and so on and so on and so on. So when we remember something, we're just remembering the last time we remembered it. The problem with that is, depending on what's going on around you at the time, sometimes what's happening in the moment can kind of seep in and become part of the memory. It's like if you were to take your phone out and video a film at the cinema, you'd have a copy of the film, but you'd also have what was going on at the time, the rustling of the popcorn next to you and all this sort of thing. And it becomes part of the memory, which is why eyewitness testimony is the least reliable form of evidence in a court, because our memories can be so fallible. We can end up remembering something, be utterly convinced we remember something that didn't happen. Huh. And that can cause all sorts of problems. But we can use that in a positive way by changing the associations with the thing. So in my case, it was Coke. And what I did was actually made my memory such that drinking Coke had the same associations as drinking, in my case, it was a particular cough medicine, which it tastes absolutely vile. And just the thought of drinking makes me go, ugh. So kind of map the two together. So any time from then on, when I thought about Coke, it brought back the same feelings as drinking this cough medicine. So I was going, oh, God, well, no, we're not going to drink that. So It doesn't physically make it something I dislike. In fact, these days, I do now drink Coke from time to time, but it's not the 6 cans a day.
Yeah.
So it's now complete. But I went for maybe 10 years not drinking Coke at all.
Yes,
and now I have the occasional one, but it's now completely under control. But it's changing the associations, which then makes it much easier to not consume the thing, because you're not going, oh, I would love that now. You're going, oh, God, no, I actually, you know what? I'm just going to stick with my water.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, it's crazy what the brain can do. And I've heard of the concept of euphoric recall, which is, you know, when you remember all the good times, or as you were saying, like the last good memory you had of whether it's sugar or a drink of Coke, whatever, it all comes down to the same thing, in my opinion. But it's like the memory of it, the positive memory, is so strong that you can't fight against it.
Yeah. And that can be used, it can be used in positive ways. We use that in coaching and in therapies and so on to help change these things. So if you had an unpleasant experience, you can kind of overwrite it, as it were. So you're not losing the memory, you're not dishonoring what you went through, you're still respecting what you went through, but you're changing the emotional charge around it. So in future, we still remember, you know, I went through that horrible event, but you know what? It's not holding me back anymore. It's not giving me night terrors. It's just that happened. It's dealt with. I can grow as a result of it and no longer have it hold me back. So we can use this sort of thing in a positive way. It can also be used in a very manipulative way. There's a reason why... So many adverts. It's always the really beautiful people, the sexy people, the lovely environments they're in. I mean, if you think of there's a particular brand of drink. I don't think they use these adverts these days, but certainly in the 70s and the early 80s, there was a particular brand of drink where I'm not going to mention it because why would we advertise things? But there was a particular brand of drink where all of their adverts, everything that was associated with beautiful people, and they were in wonderful locations. And, you know, it talked about how this drink is for beautiful people. And so it kind of, and the more you see this over and over and over again, it kind of feeds all that in. So you kind of think, you know, I'm going to have a nice sophisticated drink, because we used to think like that in the 70s and the 80s. I'm going to go for something sophisticated. I'm going to have that one because that shows I'm going to... And that's where these sorts of associations can be kind of misused a bit to manipulate us.
Yeah, that's an understatement, misused a bit. I love it. Typical British understatement. Hope you don't mind me calling you British when you're in Scotland.
Hey, I'm British. That's what we do. Everything is an understatement. How are you doing? Not too bad. Means you're on top of the world.
Yeah.
How's everything going? Could be better. You're probably in the pits of despair. We don't like to overstate.
No. So, you know, you're talking about manipulation for good and not, like, negative or positive, which means that For our own brains, can we train ourselves to use it for positive? In other words, to, I suppose, what, manipulate our brain into not wanting sugar? Is that what
You
you're
could,
saying?
yeah. Excuse me. I mean, on the topic of manipulation, I would kind of be careful with the word manipulation. For me, manipulation has very, very strong negative connotations. It's something we would generally want to avoid, particularly you'd want to avoid manipulating others. There would be exceptions. Magic tricks, for example, that is based on misdirection and manipulation and all that sort of thing. And people who are watching it, they know that's happening. They know that somehow you're going to manipulate my mind into picking whatever it was that you wanted me to pick. And you know what? I absolutely love it. I don't know how you did that. That, whoa. So that sort of manipulation, absolutely fine. But we want to be careful with we don't want to be using manipulation in a way that's going to harm other people for our benefit. I mean, sometimes I get asked, well, what's the difference between manipulation and persuasion? Because sales, we're trying to persuade someone to buy stuff, and there is nothing wrong with selling. Let's be completely honest. You walk into a shop because you probably want to buy something. The shop has something you want. They want to sell it. You want to buy it. A transaction's done. You both walk away happy. Or perhaps they'll advertise and try and persuade you. Hey, you know, you really want to come and buy this. Actually, you know what? Yeah, go on. Why not? That's okay. But manipulation is where you're trying to force them into doing that thing because you want them to, even though it's not in their best interest. And a way I would say to work out, am I using persuasion or am I using manipulation? Would you be happy with the other person knowing exactly what you are doing? If you would be happy with it, then with them knowing, it's persuasion. But if you're going, oh, I don't want them to know what I'm doing. Oh no, you're probably being manipulative.
Yeah.
So that's where I put the distinction. But and to get to what we were talking about, can we adjust our brain to not want particular things? Absolutely, we can, because everything that we know, everything we like, everything we dislike, everything we believe, all of these things are things which we have learned. When we're born, we are a complete blank slate. Heck, some people don't even breathe when they're born. You have to give them a little slap just to get them to breathe. So we are a complete blank slate. Everything that we are, we have learned. And that includes all the good and it includes all the bad, all our hopes and dreams, all our fears and worries, all our addictions, all our enjoyments, all of these we have learned. Which means we can learn other ways of doing it if we so wish. Now, the tricky bit is you can't just kind of think, you know what, I no longer like that particular thing. And because when we're thinking with our conscious mind. And the conscious mind, it's our awareness, if you like. It's the bit that you're aware that you're thinking. That's your conscious mind. And it's very powerful and it's what separates us from many of the other animals on the planet, but it's quite limited and it can only handle seven chunks of things at once. When you switch to thinking about something else, everything else you were thinking about now disappears. It's very much temporary, transient. All the long-term stuff is all in our unconscious. That's what drives everything that we do. It's like when you wake up in the morning, you don't learn how to walk and how to talk and how to feed yourself. It's all stored in your unconscious. And you can't change your unconscious just by having your conscious thinking about it. Because if we could do that, well, life would be amazing if we could do that. But we can't because it's all coded in our unconscious. And our unconscious is much faster than our conscious. So our unconscious kicks in and we're in whatever mode before our conscious has even had a time to think about it. Fears are a great way of that. We see something that's scary. We've learned that's scary. Our unconscious prepares us to fight for our life or flee for our life. The klaxons, the red alerts going, the adrenaline's pumping, all of that stuff before our conscious has even gone, oh, is that a spider? Oh, okay. Now, you know, there's nothing wrong. It can't harm it. How could it harm? But we're already in red alert. So our conscious can't override our unconscious, which is why for many people, things like affirmations by themselves don't work. They don't work because if it's something, if you're affirming something that you do at some level genuinely believe about yourself, and you're kind of just boosting it and strengthening it, brilliant. But if you're trying to use them to change you, so if you're a shy person and you keep telling yourself, I am confident every day, I'm more and more confident, your unconscious is going to go, no, we're not. Don't be silly, we're not. We're shy. And in fact, it's going to look for even more proof that we're shy. You often end up becoming even worse because you're kind of bashing yourself over the head with the thing. It's going, no, we're not. So you can't use your conscious to change the unconscious directly. But what you can do is work with your unconscious and help it to see other ways of seeing the world, other ways of doing things, other options. And that when we use hypnosis or NLP, all of these things, it's about working with the unconscious in its own language, as it were, and giving it more options.
I want to take a quick break to say that if this is your first time here, then welcome and thank you for listening to this podcast. And whether you're new or a regular and you haven't yet rated or reviewed this podcast, could I ask you to scroll down and tap on the stars to rate this podcast and also to write a short review to let me know how this podcast is helping you in your life after sugar. I love reading your reviews. And when you rate and review this podcast, not only does it encourage me to continue making new episodes, but it also helps to share this podcast and have more people see it so that we can help more people feel better and lose weight with less sugar. So again, thank you for rating and reviewing this podcast and for spreading the word about sugar.
Because ultimately, your unconscious wants the best for you. It's trying to keep you alive, keep you safe, and it wants the best for you. It's doing the best job that it can with what it has. Which is why, for example, a smoker. Now, smokers, you would be hard-pushed to find any smoker who goes, you know what, smoking is good for me. I know there was a time in the past where it was promoted as being good for you. We know smoking is bad for you. We know it kills. All smokers know this. But for many of them, there are hidden benefits they get from smoking. Some of them feel it reduces stress. These days where you can't smoke in the office or you can't smoke in the bar or the restaurant or whatever, you go outside to smoke. It's a great way of socializing. And it's also, I mean, in companies, for example, it's a great leveler. If you go out to the smoking shelter, you could be there with the CEO and the cleaner, all three of you. You're just three smokers just hanging out, having a bit of a chat. It's a great level. It's a great way to meet people. So your unconscious is getting all these benefits, even though you know at some level it's bad for you. Your unconscious is going, yeah, but it gets me a break from the stress and it gets me to meet people. Of course, I'm not going to give it up. But when we give the unconscious other options, other ways, and let our unconscious go, oh, I could do that to de-stress. Actually, that would be better because I don't end up coughing my lungs out every morning. You know what? We're going to do that. I don't need a cigarette anymore. So it's working with our unconscious. And it's the same with something like if you're taking on far too much sugar, we can give our unconscious other options or change the way that we feel about the thing. And that's what I did with cola. I changed the association. So my unconscious went, oh God, no, that's horrible. Oh, think about that. Vile. Yeah. So the thought just the thought to drink it just didn't come up.
Yeah. Yes, that makes sense. And I've come across lots of people who decide to see sugar as a poison. Myself, I don't, but I'm more neutral about it. But for some people, it helps just to see it as a poison and that, you know, has this reaction of, oh, well, I don't want to eat poison, you know?
Yeah. Quite.
And then other people, I teach them to find other ways of getting stress relief or entertainment or comfort reward, you know, so that they're not automatically turning to sugar for those things.
Exactly. I worked with a lady one time. She works with people with special educational needs, some of them can be a bit violent. It's an incredibly challenging environment that she works in. Very, very rewarding because the work that she does, it's fantastic. But it can be very emotionally challenging. And she used to find she would get in the car at the end of the day, drive home, stop off at the shop, buy a bag of sweets. And often before she'd even got home, she'd finished eating the bag of sweets. Yes. That had become almost like a ritual, part of her way of de-stressing, of switching off. Part of the way that her mind was able to go, right, we're in this mode at work, we're in this mode at home, and this is the bit that let us change between the modes. It became, she'd be eating this without even realizing. She'd go, oh my God, I've just finished that bag of sweets. I don't even remember opening it. As in literally don't remember opening it because you're on autopilot. But that was the only way her mind could find that gave her the way to de-stress. Probably because she did that once and her mind went, oh, see, I feel a lot less stressed now because we took a break, whatever. Okay, so every time we're going to stop at the shop, we're going to get some sweets because that worked last time, it's going to work this time. So used some NLP to turn the thought of eating sweets into something that made her feel nauseous, which is always a good way to help. Plus a bit of hypnosis to help her unconscious mind go, okay, why are we eating these? It gives us a break. It helps us de-stress a bit. Okay, what are other ways we could take a break? What are other ways we could de-stress? What are other things that could tell us it's time to switch out of that mode and into this mode? Well, yeah. I guess driving does it. I guess we could listen to some favorite songs on the radio. That could give us a... So it gave our unconscious itself came up with other ways to get the benefit, which then meant she didn't feel the need to go and buy those sweets anymore because she was getting the same benefits a different way. She trained her brain.
Yes.
And the underlying basis of it all is you need to work out why am I doing these things? What's the benefit to me? I know it's bad for me, but there must be a benefit somewhere.
Yes, yes. And very
what
often,
can I do instead to get that?
What can I do instead? Right, yeah. Right. And yes, I don't know anyone who believes that sugar is actually good for them, or at least they haven't told me that. They probably don't care.
Certainly not in the quantities that they'd be eating, for right. Sure, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But all the same, you know, and they say, they recognize, look, I know it's not doing me any good. In fact, it's doing me harm. And yet I cannot, in the moment, I cannot do anything but reach for the sugar because it's not yet automatic, that mm-hmm. change that you've been describing.
Exactly. Because the conscious mind is aware, hey, this is not doing me any favors, eating all of this sugar. Ultimately, at this quantity of sugar, it's going to be bad for me. But the unconscious is going, I need whatever. I know when I eat sugar, I get that. So that's what we're going to do. Because the unconscious hasn't got the other, doesn't at that point know other ways that you could get the benefit, which is why you do need to work out what is the benefit for this. Yeah. Sometimes people sort of, I mean, I've worked with smokers and I'm like, okay, so what benefits do you get from smoking? Absolutely none. Well, that's wrong for a start, because if you got no benefits, you wouldn't be doing it. There is something. You know it's killing you. You know it's bad for you. You know it makes your teeth smell. You know it. But there's something that you are getting from it. Let's find what that is and then help your unconscious to find other ways to get those benefits. Your unconscious isn't going to want to smoke.
Yeah.
Which is where the whole willpower thing doesn't even come into it, because you're not having to fight yourself. It's just your unconscious is going, I'm going to do this. You want a cigarette? Yeah. Okay. Why would I want that? I've got this.
Absolutely. And, you know, this whole thing about willpower, it comes back so often in discussions about sugar, because people have said to me, gosh, you've got such strong willpower. And I'm like, no, willpower, as you said, doesn't even come into it. I mean, neurologically, I think it's been shown that willpower can get you going for about 15 minutes and then
it's very much a short-term thing.
Very
again,
short.
It's a lot of it's coming from the conscious mind. And sooner or later, you're going to drift off onto something else.
Right.
And that goes.
Yeah.
Because the thing with stuff like sugar, from an evolutionary perspective, sugar was a good thing for us to have because it gave us energy. But in those days, we didn't have access to unlimited refined sugar. We would have sugar from fruits or from nuts or whatever. So we get it in small amounts. And we kind of evolved that, oh, I like the taste of this stuff. And I get a boost after eating it. Oh, whenever I can get those berries, I'm going to have them. So because that served us at that point. Nowadays, because we got access to almost unlimited unrefined sugars, we still get that, oh, this is nice. And our brain has still got that mentality of, oh, I better get as much of that as I can now because I don't know when I'm next going to get it. I'm going to need this.
Mm.
We haven't, our unconscious hasn't evolved to cope with society that we live in now, which is why we so often find it so hard not to take as much sugar as we could, because up until a couple hundred years ago, getting as much sugar as you could when you could get it was the right thing to do. It's how we survived through the times when we didn't have access to it. So we've got all of that evolutionary drive, which is why things like that are so popular for us, which is why it's so easy to go, oh, go on, have some of this. It tastes lovely. And we add all the nice lifestyle to it. So, hey, if you eat this, you're gonna be wonderful. Oh, yeah, okay, well.
Yes, yes. It's like the messages out there are by the processed food industry and the diet industry and like society in general. The pressure is, if you eat sugar, you'll be one of the gang. You'll be fun. You're treating yourself. You deserve it. And the opposite also, that I've been told dozens of times, if you don't eat sugar, then you're denying yourself. You're not having any fun in life. It's a sad and joyless existence. And I'm like, yeah, you haven't even met me, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely true. You, that said, you also sometimes get that from the other side. Oh, if you eat sugar, all your teeth are going to fall off and your hair is going to fall out and you'll die of loneliness. There's a middle ground in here. So wait, everybody, well, no, that's not true. Everybody isn't trying to sell their stuff. But big companies on both sides of the argument are trying to sell you their vision, their stuff. And their vision is not necessarily for a healthier you. Their vision is just for a healthier bank balance for them. Oh. So they'll, one side is promoting, hey, eat this sugar, life's going to be wonderful, buy our stuff. The other side is promoting, hey, don't eat sugar and life is going to be wonderful, buy our stuff instead. And you just think there's a middle ground. And that's where it gets so difficult for us, because both sides are going to be really, really heavily pushing their agenda. And using manipulative techniques, especially in advertising, and we've touched on some of those. As you say, oh, if you don't, why would you deny yourself the pleasure of eating this lovely sugar laden thing? Why deny yourself? It is manipulative. On the other side, you get some. Why would you want to ruin your life by even thinking about having one sweet once a month? Mm-hmm. Why would you want to kill yourself with that? Manipulation on everywhere, which is what makes it so hard for us to who's telling the truth? And yes, they're each telling the truth from their perspective, but what's the and it's cutting through all of that manipulation, because absolutely eating too much sugar is bad for us. Absolutely, we could probably all, certainly in the Western world, we could probably all benefit from drastically cutting the amount of sugar that we eat. On the other hand, completely eliminating sugar, well, we do need it. It's a carbohydrate. It's one of the three food groups, and we need it for energy. So it's finding that middle ground. And it's, how do you find that? Because you've got to cut through all of this propaganda, manipulation on all sides, which is what does make it really hard.
Yes.
And the more we kind of realize that this manipulation is going on, the harder it kind of makes it for people like you who are seeking to help people to have, you know what, let's have a healthier lifestyle. I'm not trying to force you to give up everything you enjoy in life. But by sort of saying, hey, let's cut down on sugar, we start to get the, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, you're one of those who says that sugar is, because you're now associated with all that side. It's what makes it really tricky for us, which is why being able to spot the different types of ways in which we're being manipulated helps us to go, okay, I can take the core from your message without all of the manipulation around it. I can take the core of your message without all of your added baggage. And I can see together where the middle bit is, which works for me.
Yeah. Yes. And in my opinion, that gives us as an individual, as a consumer, the power, that personal power, I call it, to decide for ourselves, you know, and to feel more confident that we can actually make our own decisions as adults without being or feeling manipulated.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That's a very powerful message.
Thank you. It's a very nice place to be. It's also a very difficult place to get into.
Yes.
Because, of course, you then run the risk of going too far and disregarding everything that's said because, oh, you're all out to manipulate. Well, there are some who are genuinely not. There are some who are just genuinely going, you know what? Here's the facts. Make your mind up. But we get so tied up with being manipulated left and right, up and down. And so we see this attempt to present the middle ground and we go, right, well, you're obviously manipulating me as well. So
yeah,
it just makes it so, so difficult.
Oh, yes, I agree. Yes, I often say that my message or life after sugar is particularly unpopular because it requires you to think for yourself and a lot of people don't want to do that.
So true, isn't it? So true.
So if people want to get in touch with you, Keith, how can they do that?
I am blessed with having a unique name. I'm the only person on the planet with the name Keith Blakemore Noble. So if you pop my name into your favorite search engine, whatever comes up, good or bad, is me. Or you can find me on all the main socials or go to my website, keithblakemorenoble.com.
Wonderful. I'll put the link in with this episode in the show notes. Thank you, Keith. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolute pleasure chatting with you as well, Netta. Thank you so much, and I hope it's been of help.
Thank you.
Gosh, I don't know about you, but I found Keith to be totally fascinating, not just knowledgeable in the workings of the brain and how our relationship with sugar, in this case, has such a huge impact on what we choose to eat, but also you may find that once you understand human behavior and the human brain, then you can start to let go of the feelings of guilt and shame that you're not doing things right or that you're broken in some way because you crave sugar and start to actually take action to cut sugar without all the guilt trip that comes with it. And that is why I created the After Sugar Club. If you're ready and committed to your own well-being and to improving your health by cutting sugar, and if you want to be with other like-minded people, then join us in the After Sugar Club. When you sign up, you'll get all the support, the accountability, and the guidance you need to break free from the diet culture as well as from the emotional dependency that you have on sugar. Go to aftersugarclub.com and click on the big green button to see everything that's included in the After Sugar Club and in the Premium After Sugar Club, where you'll get much more personalized and customized guidance and feedback to help you on your journey to breaking free from sugar. Plus, you get a whole year for free in the After Sugar Club when you sign up for the premium option. Go to aftersugarclub.com and click on the big green button to join us. Thank you for listening. That's it for this week. Keep in touch and see you soon for another episode.